Hello, and welcome to another episode of Us Unfiltered, the podcast where we discuss personal stories and explore practical strategies to help with mental health. I do want to let my listeners know that I am experiencing some technical challenges with my mics. I have ordered new mics, but unfortunately, my current ones are creating some feedback at times, so please just bear with me until my new mics arrive next week. Before we get into today's topic, let's have a quick disclaimer. This podcast and any advice, opinions, or statements within it do not constitute medical health care or other professional advice and are provided for general informational purposes only. This podcast and any information is not to be used as a substitute for professional, medical, psychological, psychiatric, or other mental health care. We recommend that you seek the advice of your doctor or other qualified health providers with any questions that you may have regarding mental or medical health concerns or conditions. I'm your host, Adrienne Salina, and today we are diving into self-care essentials with a very special guest, Kelly Pernasharo, who has a Master's of Science in Clinical Mental Health Counseling and is currently working as a Clinical Research Coordinator at UF Health.
Kelly, thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So in a few words, introduce yourself and what you're going to be talking about.
So I am also from Jacksonville, Florida, and Adrienne and I are friends. We became friends within the last year. She told me about this podcast. Mental health is something really near and dear to my heart. And so I'm just excited to be here and to talk about our topic for today.
Yay! Me too. So excited to have you. So what really is self-care?
So self-care, I think it's something that's more common and something that we use more daily. But then again, it can be expressed into different things. But basically, kind of the more clinical view or kind of like coming from counseling world, it's intentionally setting up routines that help you with daily life in so ways where it's not doing all of these things at one time within your schedule and then scheduling a little bit of me time, but it's something daily routines where it's going to add value to your life or add rest or add fulfillment or add doing activities that fulfill your passions. And so everyone's really different in that way, which is exciting. And so there's no one right way to do self-care. And also, too, with self-care, that it's not something that's an afterthought or a reward either. And so I think that's one of the harder things, or even talking with people, too, is that self-care doesn't seem to like there's enough time for it. And so kind of in ways where it's kind of maybe switching the language a little bit, it's like, okay, what's something that you can do throughout your day where it's just like 15 minutes or 10 minutes? Or just like listening to your favorite song, or even just like sitting still for 15 minutes and not doing anything.
Yeah. I think for me personally, it's something I've really had to learn to prioritize. If you know me in my personal life, and I'm sure some of my friends will agree with this, I tend to be a very go-getter, highly motivated person. Mm-hmm. So I am always active. If I am not working at my job or doing things like this podcast, I'm working on a hobby like painting, or I'm outside hiking, and I have a tendency to burn myself out because I'm go, 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 go all the time. And then I will burn both ends of the stick and realize that I have totally depleted my energy. So over the last, especially year, I've really learned how to like force myself to make time for rest. Even though those hobbies and going outside into nature are ways of self-care for me, I'm not always getting the actual rest that I need. So I'm really interested and excited to hear what you have to say about all the different aspects of self-care. I know I can apply a lot of them to my life. So yeah, let's dive into it.
Let's do it.
As a counselor, why would you say that self-care is so important to everyone?
I would say it's important because it's part of our wellness. And so definitely within culture, like you're saying, it's more of the hustle, getting things done. And it's really on the flip side of looking towards ourselves and looking towards what we need instead of looking towards something we can gain.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of, again, taking that healthy self-awareness where we're not getting consumed, but being honest with ourselves of where am I tired? Where do I feel like I'm really restless? Like those are signs and those are keys to let us know when we need to do self-care. And I know for me personally, when I'm starting to feel restless or really anxious, it's learning to accept that as invitations where I need to slow down. Honestly, a default setting for me, which is something I've relearned and continue to relearn, is when I'm stressed out that I want to keep going because I'm trying to prove something. I want to get something done. And I feel like I can't fully rest when I'm feeling restless, but my body's letting me know I need to slow down.
Yeah, that's a good call out. I can definitely relate to that. It almost feels like you have to earn rest.
Yeah.
And I think changing that mindset is really important because we deserve rest, whether we feel like we've earned it through some sort of physical work,
right?
Regardless, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And definitely with self-care as well, that it helps us to cope with stress. And so within a counselor, what you look at is people's ability to cope with stress. And so helping people walk throughout that process, that everyone has different trigger points, that everyone has different things that makes them stressed out. But overall, we all deal with stress.
Yeah.
So again, it goes into self-care of like, okay, there's different things that I need to do at certain times to help me move through difficult challenges, or exploring things that are new, or just any circumstances that could be stressful, that it's like, okay, like I can still take time to take care of myself and it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
What are some different aspects of self-care that you can practically apply to your life, and different areas of self-care where we can, you know, be intentional about that?
Yeah. So self-care, it can be broken down into 9 different domains, if you want to say it that way. And so within that, we can look at the different structures of what it could look like. And so self-care can be doing things that making us responsible for taking care of our health and doing the right thing, or it can also be things doing for leisure, doing things for pleasure and for fun. And so it's one way to kind of break down self-care. That self-care, the responsibility part would be creating a budget. You know, could be going to medical appointments that you don't want to go to.
Yeah.
You know, like doing the things that are going to help you sustain your wellness that aren't, you know, when we think of self-care, it's not like a face mask, you know, it's like the more intentional part, the things that can be stressful, but it's also being intentional taking care of yourself. And then the other part of it is the things that we can do for hobbies, or, you know, like painting, like you were saying, like we like to do, or learning a new instrument, or it could be going outside and doing activity, or doing something new and see if you could explore something that you like as well.
Interesting. Yeah. I love that. I love what you said about going to medical appointments. I don't think most people would see that as self-care. And that's so interesting that you say that, because about 4 or 5 years ago, I had gone through a significant amount of physical health challenges. I had a maxillary sinus cyst in my face that was 1.5 inches wide that I did not realize was in there. And I actually had to go see a periodontist who did skull surgery in order to like literally cut into my face and pull this cyst out of my face.
Wow. Yeah.
And then right after that surgery, I had been diagnosed with precancerous cervical cells, like all over my cervix and some into my vaginal canal. Sorry, this is a little gross for our listeners, but I ended up having to have 2 more surgeries to remove all of those cells. And so I went through a season after those 3 surgeries where I was just so paralyzed going to doctor's appointments. I just had so much anxiety that I was going to constantly get bad news. And so anytime I had like a regular checkup, or even was dealing with like a sinus infection, something simple, I would not go to the doctor.
Yeah.
Because I was just plagued with this feeling like, I know something's going to be wrong. I'm going to have more medication. I'm going to have another surgery, or I'm going to, you know, have to face another depressing outcome of bad medical news. And it really ended up doing me more harm than good. And so I ended up ignoring physical problems in my body that I could have got ahead of. For example, like I was not getting regular blood work done and my hormone levels were all off. It was affecting my mood and even my performance at work. And if I had gotten ahead of that and really attended to my body the way that I should have, like self-care, I could have, you know, probably at least shortened the amount of time that I was dealing with issues. So that's such an interesting call out. And I think it's really important that we can all see that tending to our physical wellness is part of tending to our mental wellness as well.
Yes, absolutely. And I appreciate you sharing that too. And I struggled in the past with chronic pain really bad, and people couldn't figure out what it was. And so I dealt with really bad chronic pelvic pain, and there weren't any answers as to what it was. And they did surgery and they ruled out endometriosis, and they're like, well, we don't know. And so kind of just like the fear of kind of just the wrestling of, okay, like this is something that's good for me, but also I don't want to go because I don't want to spend money to get no answers.
Yeah.
You know, and so, but it's also learning those things are important, but also just having wisdom of like what to say yes to, what to say no to.
Yeah.
And like what you're comfortable with medically and physically of what you're putting your body through as well.
Yeah. So are there any other like pillars of self-care or areas of self-care where you feel like more really applicable or things that could be practically applied?
Yeah. So different ones could be kind of switching gears a little bit would be environmental. And so that would be taking care of your surroundings. And so definitely within that too, that there's so much connection with, if there's chaos in our environment physically, that it's going to impact us mentally. And so one way, or a couple of things that we can do, it could be organizing our schedule, impacting our environments in that way. Maybe cleaning our room or our space, yeah. Ways where it's, again, that responsibility for some people. But some people really enjoy cleaning, which is myself.
Yeah,
and it's
same.
Like a nice stress.
I don't probably enjoy it too much, borderline OCD, but I definitely feel better when my home is clean and I feel like things are tidy. I don't feel like when my home is cluttered, my mind feels cluttered.
Yes, me too. Yeah. A couple of our activities could be mindful of technology use. And so I used to work with high schoolers. And so this is a big conversation all the time.
Yeah.
I'd be like, Miss Kelly, I want to use my phone. I'm like, okay, well, let's kind of talk about it. So it takes an hour for our brains to completely process the blue light that we get stimulated by using our phone. So within that too, creating rhythms of rest where it's okay, like at this time, I can turn off my phone and then go to sleep as well. So again, it kind of, so self-care can overlap. So we are getting to physical with that too. But also as well, if we're kind of throughout our day where we're kind of just like scrolling through our phones because we just kind of want to numb ourselves or kind of distract ourselves. But then again, we're missing the invitation of like, okay, I'm feeling kind of restless. I feel like I'm mentally checking out right now. Is this the best thing for me to do right now?
Yeah. I think a lot of times people think like, I can decompress by, you know, scrolling through TikTok or Instagram or even, you know, playing video games or binge watching Netflix. And while sometimes those things can be a good way to just kind of unplug, it's not always the best solution. And it's definitely not a great long-term solution for dealing with stress or anxiety. And a lot of times, especially scrolling through social media, can do more damage than good. So that's interesting about being mindful of that technology usage.
Yes. And there's a lot of research where it shows statistically that using social media for longer periods of time does increase anxiety and depression.
Yeah.
In so ways where it's because it has that numbing factor where it doesn't feel as intense, but ways where it prolongates the things that we feel as well.
Yeah. It's an avoidance technique, just like any kind of substance.
Right.
Yeah. Avoiding the root problem with just some sort of distraction.
And then kind of bouncing to another one, it would be social self-care. So this would be engaging with social support. So that can look really different, kind of just depending on being introverted or extroverted. But again, some activities could be calling a loved one. So something I really like to do is just FaceTime. And so my really good friends live really far away. And so, but even just like spending time and just communicating with them, or if sometimes I'm not able to do that, kind of just letting them know, hey, I had a really long day. Can we plan to talk on this day? So that way I can be intentional with spending time with them and not avoiding and getting into my own head about things where it's like, okay, like I want to be intentional with spending time with them. And also that's something that's good for me too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Again, another few ones for social self-care could be setting boundaries. And then also asking for help, of being honest of when you need to invite people in and being honest with what you're going through.
This is something I'm learning so much in my personal life right now, is like setting appropriate boundaries, making sure that I am saying what I need. And if those needs can't be met, then I have to give myself that kind of appropriate space. But especially setting boundaries about how I'm going to be talked to, how I'm going to be treated. If you can't respect that, then I'm going to keep you at arm's length, because I respect myself too much to allow any kind of harm to me. Self-respect is about making sure that we're being treated properly.
With boundaries too, it has, again, two parts to it, but it's boundaries that we need to set for ourselves and then boundaries within relationships too. For example, like a personal boundary for me is alone time. So I naturally introvert and just want to spend time with myself, but I have to limit that amount of alone time, because that's definitely just my comfort space. But also too, like if I am struggling with something, that I will not reach out, but ways where it's learning the boundary of like, okay, I like need to be intentional of talking with people throughout my day.
Yeah.
And then learning how to naturally ask for help, or even just learning that what I'm going through isn't as big as I feel like it is, even though in the moment it can feel really big.
Yeah.
But it helps put it back in perspective. It's like, okay, like I can still be Kelly. I can go into these spaces and not hide, but also too of learning how to be intentional with the people around me as well.
Yeah. I'm the opposite. I'm an extrovert. So
I cannot relate.
I love to spend time with people, and I kind of have to force myself to have some alone time, because I can definitely overspend on, you know, being out with friends or, you know, going and doing stuff. And then I'm like, why am I so tired? post because I haven't had any personal time in like 3 weeks. Right. I've been surrounded by people.
Another one is emotional self-care. So these are activities that can help us identify, reflect, and handle our emotions. One of these could be mood coloring. And so this is a fun one if you're kind of more artsy and creative, that it's using getting a blank sheet of paper and then grabbing different colors to represent different emotions and then filling with the page with what you are feeling. So we store our emotions on the right side of our brain, but our left side of our brain is used as our language processing and also communicating.
Yeah.
And so naturally when we feel that kind of disconnect where it's like, this is how I'm feeling, but I don't know how to communicate it. Mm-hmm. It's because it's using different parts of our brain.
Interesting.
And so doing creative activities helps us connect with the right side and left side of our brain, where it naturally becomes easier just to connect with our emotions, with language, and ways our brain is creating healthier pathways in that regard. But also it's becoming easier of like, okay, this is something that I'm feeling and acknowledging, but it doesn't feel as intense or scary or
interesting
wanting to shut down.
I've never even heard of mood coloring. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to try that.
Yeah, it's really fun. Yeah. And so I've some of the examples that I've done that I'll share is ways where it looked like different layers. So like in the inside was like one color, could be like anger, mm-hmm. but then on the outside was maybe apathy. Mm. And so ways where it's like, okay, kind of like, okay, like I'm really frustrated, but like on the outside of what I'm feeling.
Interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll have to try this. What are some other emotional ways to help us, you know, tend to our self-care?
Yeah. So one, which is pretty obvious, but I think it's helpful. So I'll say it, is honestly acknowledging how we feel.
Yeah.
Because there's so many things where we can distract ourselves and that's easy to do, but just being genuine with, okay, like this is how I'm feeling.
Yeah.
And there's a really helpful tool. You can Google it. It's called the anger iceberg. And so definitely with anger that we can have different ways of expressing anger. Mm-hmm. And so with some people, it can be more, can look like more aggressive. And then some people can look like sadness where they're just really weepy or they disengage in ways they don't want to feel anger, but it is anger. And so with the anger iceberg, if we were to think about it and kind of to draw you this picture, and that an iceberg that we just see what's on the top and then underneath the water of the iceberg, that it's this really big mass of ice. The first thing that we can see is anger, or we can experience anger. And then below the surface can be all these different things. So some of those examples could be helplessness. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, I feel really helpless, but I don't want to show that because that feels weak and vulnerable. So I'm like, anger is going to be what shot out first.
Yeah.
Or even just being hungry.
The hanger.
The hanger. Yes. Or he's also just feeling guilt. But again, that's also feels like a more vulnerable emotion. So ways where it's expressing anger is more of one kind of what's seen or experienced. Another one is shame. Mm. And so another vulnerable emotion, but ways where we have that covering with anger, or we feel like we're sensing anger first, but it's then it's looking back into of that acknowledgement of, okay, like what is going on, and having that healthy check-in.
Yeah. Yeah. My personal therapist reminds me a lot that anger is a secondary emotion. And so a lot of times when we're in our sessions together and I'm like, oh, I'm just feeling so angry about this, she'll have me like physically break it down. Like, okay, why are you angry? What is driving the anger? Because the anger is just secondary. But the root issue is not exactly anger. It's because I'm hurt, or right. I'm feeling rejected, or I'm mm-hmm. genuinely just sad. And yeah. like it's coming out as anger. So yeah, that's interesting. You know, acknowledging your feelings. I like to say something a lot, which is you have to feel it to heal it. If you don't give yourself that space to say, this is where I'm at, this is what I'm feeling, and it's okay to feel this way, you'll just continue to avoid it.
Right.
And avoiding the problem doesn't make it go away. It's still there. You can sweep something under the rug, but it's still underneath the rug. There's a lump in the rug now. So, you know, I like to say you have to feel it to heal it. Mm-hmm. And give yourself that opportunity to like really go through all those different emotions. You know, they say that, you know, going through grief is the several stages of grief, and sometimes it can be cyclical. Mm-hmm. And in order to really process grief and cope with loss or any kind of grief feeling, you have to be able to get through those different stages.
Yes. And grief is way more common than we think, that it's through any loss or transition in life is grief.
Yeah.
And so that's also another acknowledgement too of what anger could be.
Yeah.
You know, like it's ways where it's could be moving. It could be
ending a relationship.
Ending a relationship. You know, it could be good things that are starting that are new, but it's also like feeling the transition of something as well.
Yeah. I think sometimes change is so much more challenging than we want to admit that it is. Even if it's good change, it's uncomfortable.
Right.
All right. What's another area of self-care?
Yes. Intellectual is another one. So these are activities that are stimulating and promote learning. And so it could be reading. It could be making a vision board. So vision boards are not my thing.
Me either.
But it's for somebody. But definitely it's just taking that time where it's being able to learn something and learn something new. And just having that healthy stimulation within our brains of pursuing something that is of interest, but also gaining knowledge and also pursuing a process of learning as well.
Yeah. I'm an audiobook junkie, especially personal development books or any kind of true crime.
Yeah.
But it's that good stimulation, you know, it gets your brain moving and thinking about things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And a couple other examples could be trying a new hobby, or it could be listening to podcasts or starting a podcast.
I noticed that you have spiritual on this list. I'm curious on how we can take care of ourselves spiritually, especially if you do not feel like you have any kind of religious or spiritual affiliation.
Mm-hmm. So kind of a broad term for spiritual self-care would be activities that connect our purpose and meaning. So this could be being in nature and how people can connect with that in different ways spiritually. And it could be helping others. And so with spiritual self-care, that it's a way of doing things where it helps you reflect on your values and what's meaningful and important to you.
That's interesting. I never even thought about it like that.
Yeah. So that's definitely too something I noticed within counseling, that people really don't identify with maybe values, or like not knowing how to verbalize what is important to them or what are their values, but really our values will impact our decisions every day.
Yeah.
So it's doing activities that will impact of like, okay, what's the significance of what I'm doing?
Yeah.
Or even just having that reflection of, you know, just gratitude. There's so much research where it shows a lot of decrease in anxiety with gratitude, and it helps form like healthy neural pathways with gratitude, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Because it's our brain is learning intentionally that process of what can we be grateful for? What can we celebrate instead of a mindset of having lack or being frustrated with things are. In the spite of this, I can still express gratitude in ways where it's really encouraging that there's so much research that really supports that it promotes healthy brain health.
I think a lot of times it's so hard to find gratefulness when we're experiencing like depression and anxiety. And so trying to find things to be intentionally grateful for, even if it's something small, like, you know, I'm grateful the sun is shining today, or I'm grateful that I was able to get out of bed today and take a shower. You know, it's like starting with the little things can make a big difference.
Yeah. There's a nice exercise where it's finding five things that you're grateful for.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember I had a professor where he was telling us the five things that he's grateful for. And one of them was a person holding the door open for him. I'm like, wow, I never would have considered that for like a gratitude thing. But yeah, the more that you're open to see that and to respond to that and be sensitive to that, it really can impact them. Wow, like there's so many more things to celebrate throughout my day.
Yeah.
Or to acknowledge that the things that are good throughout my day as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. We did talk about like the medical aspect, but are there other ways that we can be more intentional physically with our self-care?
Yeah, so definitely the main things would be sleep, diet, and exercise. So kind of, again, just basic things, but also essential things as well. And so with sleep, that it shows that 7 hours or more is what's needed for a healthy rest. So anything less than that, that it will cause your body to generally experience restlessness and things like that too. And so again, learning healthy sleep hygiene habits. And so everyone can be different in this way because there's different things that will help us to feel more relaxed.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of the fun, creative side of self-care, if I put it that way too, that you can find things that help you to wind down and help you to relax. But again, good guidelines would be cutting off technology an hour before you plan to rest. But there's other things that you can do that are self-soothing. So for example, for myself, I'll make tea. Mm-hmm. And then I also like using essential oils. And then I'll turn off really big lights around the house, and I'll just use little lamps. So naturally, like my brain is learning, okay, it's wind down
time. Yeah,
and having that routine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love that. I used to struggle with insomnia really bad throughout my early 20s. I can tell you now how important sleep is, because it heavily affected my mood and just how I communicated with people. Mm-hmm. So now I've learned that one of the ways that I can continue to get better sleep is forcing myself to be in a routine. Some people lay down and they fall asleep.
Good for them.
Yeah, I know. I dislike those people. But if I get off my sleep routine, my entire sleep schedule will be messed up for like weeks. So I have to force myself to go to bed the same time every night, and get up at the same time every day, even on the weekends. And just being in a proper routine has really forced my brain to be like, okay, now it is time to go to sleep. Now mm-hmm. it's time to wake up. It sounds silly, but it does work.
It does. Yeah. Cause our body and our brain will learn those rhythms.
Yeah.
Also with building routines is that it will take time. And so that's definitely the process with doing any healthy routine with self-care. And so it's not having a perfectionist mindset with like, okay, that didn't work. But it's like, okay, what are things that could be adjusted? And what are ways where I can just learn, okay, this is the responsibility side of self-care where I need to build this healthy routine in order to promote wellness as well.
Yeah. The thing I've had to force myself to do the most physically mm-hmm. to improve my self-care is diet. It's insane how much what you eat really does affect your brain health.
Yes, very much so. And also with refined sugars and carbohydrates, that it does increase our serotonin, but it also causes spikes in blood sugar and then naturally it will crash.
Yeah.
And so when that happens, that our body will increase our cortisol release. So ways where our body will kind of learn that cycle. It's like, okay, like I can have sugar and carbs that help me to feel better, which is releasing serotonin, mm-hmm. which can make us feel that way. But then again, when our blood sugar naturally crashes with any person, it doesn't have to be someone predispositioned with diabetes, mm-hmm. That it will cause your cortisol stress hormone to increase.
That's so interesting. I did not know that.
Yes. So yeah. It's definitely mood, food really is a thing. And then exercise. So it's recommended to have at least 2 hours and 30 minutes of aerobic exercise throughout your week. And so again, you could space this out, which is kind of nice, where it's just like 20 minutes through different parts to start your day. And so, but this is good for brain health and for heart health, kind of just getting your body mm-hmm. motivated and things like that too. This also could be a thing where it's finding a new routine where it could be going for hikes or going outside, and that could be part of your cardio.
I always feel like jazzed after a good run or a HIIT session, especially cardio. Mm-hmm. Any kind of cardio, I am like ready to take on the freaking world afterwards. I'm like, I can do all the things.
Yeah, I know for exercise, for me, that expectation had to change what it looked like, just dealing with chronic pain for a while. There was a lot physically I couldn't do.
Yeah.
And so, but one thing that was really wonderful that I found was just going outside and just going for walks, even though like it mentally and physically it felt really big, but it was something that like, okay, like I can do this thing and I can do this thing somewhat well, you know, but it's like, okay, like this is something that I'd rather stay inside and like lay down fully, because if I moved around or if I walked around, that I would be in so much pain I felt like I was gonna pass out.
Wow.
And so ways where I was like, okay, like I can do this exercise to help just mentally just being outside.
Yeah.
And research also shows that being outside for 20 minutes in sunshine relieves symptoms of depression.
Yeah.
Which is really encouraging.
I love being outside. Mm-hmm. I have to be outside at least a couple of days a week because I get cabin fever bad. You mentioned earlier about creating a budget. How other ways financially can we, you know, take care of ourselves?
Yeah. So one could be planning for the future. So that could be another thing too, with financial goals that you can set for yourself.
Yeah.
In ways where it's being intentional with your finances and building a healthier mindset within that as well. It could also be intentional of treating yourself on something you value and learning that as well, where it's like, okay, like I do want to do this fun thing. It does cost money. What are ways that I can intentionally grow money in a way that can be healthy, and then spending it on something that you can really appreciate? Like, okay, like it took hard work to do this, but also just being able to enjoy something too.
Yeah. I love to travel, especially any kind of travel that involves like physical activity. Like I love going to the mountains and going hiking or any kind of like kayaking, paddleboarding type trips. So I try to dedicate money every year for some sort of activity type trip where I know I'm going to be outside a ton. I'm going to be in a cabin because I feel so like rejuvenated when I come back from those trips.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome.
How do we deal with stress with work and finding a way to have self-care occupationally?
Yeah. So kind of some basic ones would be honest about workload. Mm. And so having that self-check-in where, okay, where am I getting frustrated? Where I'm getting restless? What are the things that are inside my control? What are the things outside of my control?
Yeah.
So kind of just going through our thoughts and having that self-reflection. It could also be setting boundaries with work. So again, boundaries that we set for ourselves and with others.
I really struggle with this one because I am a perfectionist. Like at heart, I've been this way my whole life, even as a small child. And I tend to take on a lot of projects with work. And a lot of times my projects are like really large projects that have mini monsters underneath them. And there was a time actually around this time last year where I was just absolutely drowning in work. I was working all day at the office and then taking my laptop home and working after work. And I was feeling so burned out and I did not speak up soon enough. I was just so flustered. It was coming out with my attitude at work, and I should have gone to my boss and said, you know, like, I am struggling. This is too much for me. But I didn't want to seem weak. I didn't want to seem incapable of getting the work done, when in reality, it was not my inability to complete the work. It was that there was too much work for me to physically do in a reasonable amount of time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, luckily, after that season had passed, I was able to have an honest conversation with my manager and say, you know, like, this was just way too much and I should have said something sooner. And so now we have that open communication of saying, like, okay, this is a reasonable amount of work that I can do in this time frame, and everything else is going to have to wait. But, you know, that was a hard learning experience for me because I did not want to seem like I was incapable.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard. And it's learning how to say healthy no's.
Yeah.
With boundaries. And so that can be also incorporated into work setting.
Over the past year, I have really learned to ask for help from my coworkers. Like, guys, I'm struggling with this project. I feel like I have creative block, or I feel like I don't really know the best way to map this out, you know, and just having a fresh set of eyes on something or having fresh perspective can really help you get over hurdles that you may just be struggling with on your own. So being able to ask for help a lot of times is great.
Yeah, absolutely. And then also with occupational self-care can be reflecting on why I'm here. So again, this is an individual thing where it's being able to reflect on values.
Yeah.
Like, we could be in a work setting where we're frustrated and or getting frustrated easily, or kind of questioning, like, why am I here?
Yeah.
You know, but then being able to see, like, okay, like, being here helps me, you know, to learn something new, or it helps me to, like, be intentional learning how to manage stress, you know, even if it's a really stressful environment, you know. So, and then again, it could layer into, like, gratitude or things like that as
well. Yeah, that's exactly what I was about to say, is finding opportunities to be grateful. I'm very fortunate to work for a nonprofit organization, and the work that we do supports veterans and their families. So I am very fortunate that on the days where I'm super stressed out or I'm feeling, you know, really burned out, I can remind myself, like, okay, this is the mission. I'm here to support these veterans who have served for our country and give them the help that they need, that they are having a hard time accessing because of, you know, just how things are set up within our governmental system, and also help their families. And we're doing all of this at no cost to them. So on those days where I'm, like, absolutely frustrated, I'm like, okay, this isn't about me, this is about them.
Right. The work is meaningful.
Yeah, the work is meaningful. It gives me purpose. But, you know, that's not everyone's, you know, situation. So, like you said, finding gratitude, even if you're unhappy with where you're at.
Yeah.
It could be a good learning season for you.
Absolutely. And then our last one is creative self-care. So it can be expressing yourself by creating something. And so something that is a fun creating activity, which I don't think is looked at in this way, is baking and cooking. So that is really using the creative side of your brain.
Yeah, I love to cook.
I enjoy eating.
Don't we all?
Yes. So I like baking way more so. Right. I feel like I fail less
baking than cooking. I didn't know that you even baked.
I do. Ooh. I have a KitchenAid.
Me too.
Oh. Yeah. Very fun.
Yeah. Yes. I love to bake. I grew up in, well, I lived with my grandmother for the first 5 years of my life. We all lived in the same house, and she was an excellent baker. And so she taught me how to bake. So a lot of times, I don't even think it's that I necessarily like to bake so much. It's that I like those memories that I had with my grandmother. Mm-hmm. They're extremely fond memories for me. Anytime that I'm baking, I actually just made cookies a couple nights ago. I thought of her the whole time. So in a way, it's like connecting to a meaningful moment for me. But I love to cook, and I love to feed people because I know I'm a good cook. But in a weird way, it's de-stressing for me. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't like to come home and cook a meal after work, but I super enjoy it.
And it's cool because it's using, our right side and the left side of the brain. So it's like the right side of being able to try new things, and then also the left side, it's like you're following a recipe.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's interesting in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. That is awesome.
Yeah. And then other some basic ones could be painting. Coloring books. So this is one that I really enjoyed. So finding adult coloring books where it's like finding like really tiny things to color in. Another, like, I don't know, I guess a good mental exercise is one that you can do if you want to learn on how to overcoming perfectionism, is that you like color over like all the lines. What I've done in the past, I'm working with people. Okay. Like for 5 minutes, I want you to color outside the lines, and you know, like your one goal is to color outside of the lines. Like that is the that's how you accomplish the next activity. But it doesn't feel like you're accomplishing anything because you're like, oh my gosh, this looks terrible.
Yeah.
And then it's being able to process like, okay, like what kind of like bubbled in, like what kind of thoughts they came up for you? What are other areas where you feel like you are having those same thoughts? It's using our right and our left side of our brain. So it's helping us connect with our emotions in that way.
Yeah.
And so something for me with coloring books, that I like to do that a lot when I'm angry.
Yeah.
Because it's being able to physically just like color in something. And just being really intentional of like, I can get all my frustrations of like how much I really press down like on this paper.
I love to paint, and I used to do a little bit of commission work for painting, but I kind of stopped doing that because it was turning a hobby into work, mm-hmm. and it was no longer self-care. It was more stressful. So a lot of times, like what I like to do now for painting is I will start with a blank canvas, mm-hmm. and I will have no goal in mind starting with that canvas. Mm-hmm. I will literally just pick up paint and start painting.
Yeah.
And normally something really beautiful will kind of come out of it, even if I like paint over the background several times. But I feel like it's an opportunity for my brain to just kind of let go. Mm-hmm. Like there's no intention here. I'm just going to let my body and brain just like reconnect. And I don't know why, but it feels so good.
And it reminds me, there's something called mindfulness drawing. So whenever you move your pencil, you breathe in. And then whenever you move it in a different direction, you breathe out.
Interesting.
And so a lot of the drawings usually end up looking like circle-like, mm. which is really interesting because ways where it's like you get to see your breath kind of on the paper.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And so that's something where it's really nice where it's like drawing really slow and practicing your breath. And then when you change directions, using it a different way.
So as we're wrapping up for today, what are some good self-care practices for somebody who's just starting out on a self-care journey?
I would definitely just be honest of where you would want to grow. So I think that's a really good starting place where it's looking at where you want to have more wellness, yeah. and accepting that as an invitation of like, okay, well, what are things that I can intentionally, what are disciplines that I can build in routines from there? And so, but again, really basic ones as well. I think sleeping and eating and exercise are, you know, really
good place to start.
But then again, it's being able to make it personalized, which is nice.
Yeah.
And so it's even building routines within your morning. What are ways where it kind of helps you get set up for the day in a ways where you feel like you can be intentional and mindful with your day as well, instead of rushing from one thing to the next as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Well, folks, we've learned a lot today. Thank you so much, Kelly, for being here. You've been a wonderful guest. I feel like I've learned a lot that I can actually apply to my life today.
Yay.
Keeping self-care as a priority of our lives is just so important to our emotional and physical well-being. And it is okay to seek help along the way. You know, if you need to reach out for professional help and you have the means to do so, I highly encourage it. I love my therapist. She's changed my life. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. And thank you for joining us on this episode of Us Unfiltered. Until next time, take care. And remember, mental health matters. And so do you.